In this season finale episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska...
He answers the phone, "Hi, honey." And I said something like...
Laura Reed struggles to articulate her situation over the phone to her husband, and Melissa Shippey experiences what it's like when your companion tries to travel light in the backwoods of Alaska.
Here's what we'll do. We'll get your topo map out, and we'll just, you know, start navigating. Like, look at the landscape, we'll figure it out, we'll figure out our way back. She goes, I didn't bring any maps.
A Step Too Far. Up next on Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. I'm Rob Prince. Doctors say exercise is one of the best things you can do for your health. I've heard it said if exercise came in a pill, they'd prescribe it to everyone. Well, everyone but our next storyteller, maybe. In the spring of 2023, Laura Reed decided to take a little walk outside during her lunch break at Bassett Army Hospital in Fairbanks. She told this story at our March 2025 live event in Fairbanks.
April was breakup season. It was probably about 40 degrees, so, you know, warm for us. And grabbed my coat, grabbed my hat, got my tennis shoes on, got my phone, got my earbuds, and went out the back door of the hospital. Didn't tell anybody where I was going. This is important. There's a really nice trail on post that's paved that goes kind of from the back door of the hospital, basically, across Gaffney, and then you can walk along parallel to the Chena River. I don't know if any of you remember this April, well, that year, we'd gotten a lot of snow. So the path was clear, but the snow that was on each side of the path was probably about waist high. So it was a lot of snow, and it was kind of strange to be walking with that much snow there. So I come to the clear part of the path, and I notice there's an area in front of me that looks wet. Covers the entire path across, and probably about 10 feet deep. So I come up to it, and I look at that, and a little voice in my head says, "That could be black ice. Maybe you shouldn't walk there." The rest of my head said, "No, go ahead. You always walk to the corner, so go ahead and walk." So I tried. I took about one step, and my legs flew up in the air, my back hit the ground, and my right leg did one of those whiplash things on the ground. Yeah. So I looked down, and sure enough, I can see my right ankle growing. It hurt. It hurt a lot. And I'm still laying on the black ice. It was cold and wet. And I think, okay, who do you usually call if you're hurt and you need help? That would have been such a good idea. I did not call 911. I called my husband. Poor guy. He answers the phone, "Hi, honey." And I said something like, and he said, "What?" And I said, "I've fallen on the ice. I'm outside and I can't get up and I hurt and please come get me." And he said, "Where are you?" So I tried to explain. I didn't do a very good job of explaining. But he said, "Okay, I'm on my way." So he hung up, and I'm sitting there, and then I kind of look around a little bit, and I realize that on each side of me, remember that snow that was really deep? I was sitting, so all I could see on the side was snow, and I looked behind me, and you know the path was curvy, so I couldn't really see too far behind me. And I look in front of me, and it's a clear path all the way down to River Road, where the river goes over the Chena. But the snow was still so high, it was almost like a tunnel in front of me. And I realize nobody can see me, because I couldn't see anything other than snow and the path in front of me. And I was getting a little scared, a little worried, and I called my husband, but still, he can't even see where I am. And I'm getting wet, and I'm getting cold. Still don't call 911, but I call one of the nurses that I work with, and left her a voicemail. So I call another nurse that I work with, and happily she answered. And she said, "Laura, I just got the strangest text from your husband," because they actually used to work together, so they kind of knew each other. And I said, "Yeah, I've fallen on the ice. I can't get up. I'm kind of stuck." And she said, "Where are you?" So I tried to explain again, and she was not at the hospital right then, but said, "Okay, I'll text. We'll get people to come get you." I said, "Okay." I hung up. And I'm waiting. I'm getting colder. And my ankle's growing, by the way. I can see it growing. And my foot was at kind of a strange angle. So I was pretty sure it was, I don't know if any of you have ever tried to move purposefully on black ice. It doesn't work. Especially not when you can't put any weight on your foot. So I was just kind of stuck. And I'd been sitting there for probably about half an hour by now, getting really scared and feeling really sorry for myself. And suddenly, my phone rings. Don't know the number, but I answer it. And it was one of the doctors that I work with, who's a captain, active duty. And she says, "Where are you?" So I again try to explain where I am. She asked some really good questions to be able to be a little more specific about where I was. And then she said something like, "Oh, I'm on the wrong side of the road." So just a couple seconds after that, way down past River Road, I see her. And I say, "I see you." And she turns and she waves and I wave back. And she starts running towards me. No, it was okay. There wasn't any black ice down there. It was all right. It was okay. It was clear where she was running. As she's running, out of the kind of the corner of my eye, I see the top of a truck that it looked like it had like pulled over to the side of the road. And I look over, and this kind of felt like a dream, but I see these four soldiers start leaping through the snow, coming to get me. And I was just so in shock. I said, "What are you doing?" And the staff sergeant that was there said, "Well, we're coming to rescue you, of course." So they get to me at about the same time that the captain gets to me. And she, of course, wants to come help. So she starts to step out onto the black ice with all of us going, no. So she doesn't fall. They catch her. She's good. So the five of them are sitting there, standing there, kind of trying to problem solve, how do we get Laura off the ice? And I should mention that these five soldiers, I had two colonels, a major, a captain, and a staff sergeant. And out of that group, there were two doctors, one nurse, and two army medics. So I was in pretty good hands. So while they're problem solving what to do, the colonel whose truck it was leapt back through the snow over to his truck. And then pretty soon I see his truck coming down the walking path, because you know, he's a colonel, so he could drive anywhere that he wants to. So he's driving on the walking path towards me. He stops, and then four of them kind of line up single file next to me in the snow. They were still, you know, in this much snow. They line up single file next to me to do basically a dead man lift on me to try to kind of shuffle step to get me into the colonel's truck. So they pick me up, and as soon as they get me up, I see my husband drive by. So they shuffle step me into the colonel's truck, and he backs down that path, able to come back onto Gaffney, and we discuss how I'm not actually a TRICARE beneficiary, I just work there. So they had to stop in the Bassett parking lot, transfer me into my husband's car. And he then drove me to FMH, where sure enough, I had broken my ankle in three places and did it so well that I got to sit on my butt for 2 weeks with my leg elevated before I could even have surgery. The best part of this story, though, is what was happening behind the scenes. While I was sitting, laying on the black ice, feeling sorry for myself, because I didn't even hear about all of it until a few weeks later. Those two people that I had called texted every single person they could think of that worked at Bassett. And so many different search parties and groups were formed to come look for me. Someone had a wheelchair and was going through the parking lot. Some other groups ran the opposite direction on the trail. And how the two colonels ended up coming after me was they were in a meeting with my boss and also the hospital commander. And my boss got the text and she read it out loud. Laura Reed's fallen. She can't get up. She's outside. And these two colonels, who happened to be the deputy commander of clinical services and the deputy commander of nursing, so two second in charge of the hospital, they heard this and they jumped up and they started to leave. And I'm told that the hospital commander said something like, "Where are you going? We have people for that." So when I was preparing for this story tonight and talking with coworkers about what happened and what they remembered, every civilian that I would tell would say something like, "Oh my gosh, it was so amazing, it was so great, we did this, we did this, we did this," and we'd get really excited about it. But when I talked to the active duty Army folks, they'd say, "Nah, it's what we do." But it's what they do. It's what they do. They answer the call. They answer the call, whether it's across the world or across the street. They answer the call, and they did for me. And I think three of my rescuers are here tonight. There might be more out there, but I am so grateful. Thank you.
Laura Reed. She shared that story at our March 2025 live event in Fairbanks. This is Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, the A Step Too Far episode. I'm Rob Prince. More than once in my life, I've been distracted or lost in thought and missed my exit on the freeway. It's pretty annoying and makes me feel real stupid, but there's no serious harm done. It's a different story when that happens in Alaska, on the ice, while mushing. In 1999, Melissa Shippey was a senior in college and decided to take a nice, easy, overnight mushing trip with her far more experienced mushing friend in the backwoods of Alaska when they missed their quote-unquote exit. She shared this story at our March 2025 live event in Fairbanks.
So it was Jean, Jen, and myself. Jean didn't have a team, so she was fully kitted out with a really nice solid oak Hudson Stuck era freighting sled and six large freighting dogs. And I make a point to say that was because she is a fairly petite woman. And when you think about dog sleds, you know, you might have seen sprint sleds or Iditarod sleds, and this was not that. So we pack up. It was a beautiful sunny day, a lot like today, and we're heading down the trail. And 1 hour turns into 2 or 3 hours. We stop a couple times to enjoy the sun, and it was kind of hot for the dog, so we were taking our time. I'm in the back. You know, Jen was a little more experienced with driving her sled. She was doing great. And I'm in the back, and I had a budget sled that I think cost me about $400, which back then was a lot of money for me. But it was like the most rigid, non-forgiving sled I think I've ever seen or driven. And it was put together with like little, I'd call it angle iron, but it was aluminum. So everything was bolted down and bracketed together. So every bump you hit, you stand the chance of like flipping the sled. And I flipped that sled many, many times and got dragged many, many times. So I had gotten the hang of driving it by this time. So we're heading out on the trail and midday sun turns to late afternoon sun and we're just kind of lollygagging around and we're out there for 4 or 5 hours and afternoon sun turns into dusk. And we stopped at one point and I said, hey, you know, weren't we supposed to only go about 15 miles? Yeah, no worries. It's an obvious turn. We get on the Susanna River. It's an obvious turn to these people's cabin. Like, okay, no problem. Let's keep going. So pretty soon, dusk turns to pitch dark. And I reach into my sled for this headlamp, which is about 0.5 lumens worth of light. So when you're out in the wilderness in Alaska, and I'm sure many of you have experienced the backcountry more than I have, you turn your headlamp on and the light can just get swallowed up by the darkness, right? So just depending on the night, if there's moon or no moon, full moon, whatever. So we're trucking down the trail and I have a little bit of a glow over here from my headlamp against the snow. So you can kind of tell like, yeah, I can barely see my dogs in front of me. I know there's two mushers in front of me. Okay, I can kind of see their headlight a little bit glowing off the snow. And I look over here and it's pitch black like this stage. And we keep going and I kind of see the glow of the snow. And again, another one, it's pitch black over here and I hear, shh. And I said, stop, we gotta stop. And I was starting to get like really like nervous. And I said, Jen, there's open water over here and I can't see. And she's like, you're fine, we're gonna keep going. So one of the things that happened between that afternoon and that evening was this kind of funny narrative started to appear. And it went from, woohoo, we're on a girls' trip, it's a great sunny day, we're having a great time, to, hey, you know, I think we really need to turn around. Like, we got to figure this out. This just seems like too far. Like, 15 miles, and we've been out here like 6-7 hours. Like, this math is not adding up. I'm not super experienced, but I have a general feel for how long it should take. Look, it's an obvious turn off the trail. So the obvious turn off the trail turned into, I think I smell smoke. And I was like, what does that have to do with anything? She goes, well, I smell like wood smoke from a wood stove in a cabin. And I'm like piecing this together going, okay, so the cabin we were supposed to go to that is unoccupied, but somehow you smell wood smoke from a cabin. So let's keep going a little farther. I was like, okay, fine. Whoosh, another open lead. And by this time, my frustration had built and built and built. And she's like, no, I know we're close. We're getting close. Can you smell that smoke? I'm like, I do not smell smoke. I hear open water, and I'm really nervous about it, and you're not listening, but I don't smell smoke. We go a little farther, and finally I was like, this is it. I've had it. Like, you're not listening. I just completely lost my cool, and I was like, I'm not going any further. We're done. It's pitch black. I can't see where we're going. There's open leads all around us. And you want to keep going because there's this cabin, there's this smoky cabin narrative going on. And so we finally stopped. And she's like, well, where are we going to stay? I'm like, right here with our sleds. This is where we're staying. Like, this is our smoky cabin right here. This is it. This is what we got. So we're out on some river in the middle of the night. We'd gone a little farther to where we kind of felt like we weren't seeing black anymore, where we felt a little more comfortable. And, you know, by that time, the wind was picking up, and we're just beat. We're tired. Dogs are really tired. And, you know, there's like this phenomenon that happens when you're packing, especially when you're more of a novice camper. You're like packing food, like, yeah, that's enough food. And so I reach into my dog sled and it's like this Mary Poppins thing going on. I'm like, where's all the food? So I dig down in there and I find these, like, what I had packed was like my little tortilla bags full of food for the dogs, which wasn't much. I had underpacked and I had a couple little baggies of Milk-Bone biscuits. And I'm just like doling out all the food to my dogs so they had some calories in them. And I knew we were like up a creek, like no pun intended. Sorry, that was really bad. That was really bad. And so the wind was picking up and I had gone, like, for years before I'd gone to the Sled Dog Symposium. I don't know if any mushers in here remember that. And so I learned a few things. And so this one Yukon Quest musher was talking about, you know, it was so windy and the weather was terrible. I had to flip my sled over to sleep in it to get out of the wind. And I was like, I can't flip my sled over. So I pulled all my stuff out, which wasn't much. And I bedded down with my sleeping pad and my sleeping bag, and I climbed in. And the wind just starts whipping and howling, and all of a sudden, way up front, the front dog sled, like, rah, 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 cousin swear. I was like, Jen, what is she all right? Like, what's going on up there? She's like, I don't know. The dogs are acting up. And so, like, her stuff's flying around in the wind. So none of us really got much sleep that night. But fast forward to the next morning, we woke up. And it was, like, it was a beautiful day, like today. But we looked around, and I was, like, in awe of the scenery around us. But it was very clear that the magnitude of the water body we were on was orders of magnitude bigger than the river we were supposed to be on. It was like going from the little narrow channels of the upper Chena River, which is kind of how the Susanna looks like when you go down there. It's like densely forested, beautiful little creek. And we're out there in like the Yukon River landscape magnitude. And so I was like, hey, Jen, you know, we really need to melt some snow for these dogs. Like, get your cooker out, and we'll start. And she kind of looks at me, and she goes, I didn't bring it. Like, okay, our dogs are getting dehydrated. I guess, I mean, they can eat some snow, but that's, like, not really enough. I was like, okay. So we're kind of arguing about that, like, you should have brought it. Well, we're supposed to be at a cabin. I'm like, obviously, we're not at your friend's cabin. Like, we overshot the mark. Clearly. So I go back and I'm like figuring out what to do. Like, what do we do? What do we do? Like, we don't know where we are. We're on this really huge river, north side of Denali Park on the north boundary. And I said, you know, here's what we'll do. We'll get your topo map out and we'll just, you know, start navigating. Like, look at the landscape. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out our way back. She goes, I didn't bring any maps. Okay, so we're going to have to figure this out, like, somehow. We're going to have to figure out how to get back. She's like, but I know. I'm like, no, I don't want to hear that the cabin is out there again. We've clearly overshot the mark. I'm the rookie. You're supposed to be the experienced team leader here. And we're bickering back and forth and back and forth. And I'd eaten like my last half of my last PB&J. My Tillamook cheese was frozen and I was out of dog food. And all of a sudden you hear this whee in the distance, like when you're out hiking or whatever and you hear a bush plane coming from the far distance. And I was like, do you hear that? Do you hear that noise? She's like, no, I don't hear anything. So we're kind of fussing at each other back and forth. I'm like, wait, listen. And this sound gets a little closer. I'm like, that noise. I hear that noise, and I suddenly look up downriver, and I see a headlight. And it was daylight, but I still, this headlight caught my eye. And here it was a husband and wife team who'd been out in the bush camping on the north side of Denali, and they were coming up river toward us by pure luck. And they pulled up next to us, and we all of us looked at each other like, what are you doing out here? And they're like, no, what are you doing out here? And we're like, yeah, right. Yeah, what are we doing out here? And so as they were pulling up, my friend Jen said, oh, actually, I know these guys. I'm in big trouble. And so I just kind of let that scene unfold. And these really, really nice people, they were super experienced, and they led us back to the cabin. And you're thinking, well, just turn around and go back. Like, but I don't know where back is. She clearly didn't. She missed the mark. And going back to the open leads, so we're on our way back, and we get a couple miles back downriver. And I just have this, like, picture snapshot memory in my head of, it was like probably half mile wide stretch of river, and it was solid ice. We'd come through that the night before. We didn't know it. But somehow overnight and through the next morning, the water had like bubbled up, and just it was just water everywhere. So I'm I'm third in line, and we're picking our way back. And by the way, these people knew where the Sushiana River cabin was. They're like, we'll take you there, but you overshot it by 30 miles. I didn't say much the rest of that day. I was pretty pissed and tired. So that we spent the night there, and the next day we're picking our way back to, we're done, like we're heading out. So we pack up and we get back to Stampede Road, and we're just like, oh, we're so tired. We're just like, I just want to get there, and I want to unpack, and I want to go home, and I want to get in my bed. I'm so tired. This was not a relaxing trip. It was beautiful, but it was not relaxing. So I'm unloading, and I'm packing the dogs in the truck, and I give my friend back the two dogs that she had loaned me. And she's saying stuff, and I'm not really listening, and I'm packing it, get the sled on top of the box. And all of a sudden, I hear her say something like, yeah, that was actually a really great trip. Like, we should really try to do this again sometime. And I just kind of looked up, and I was like, yeah, I'll let you know. Thank you.
Melissa Shippey. She shared that story at our March 2025 live event in Fairbanks. Thanks for listening to this edition of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, the A Step Too Far episode. Today's episode was edited by Ryan Peterson, Chrysantha Delnay, and myself. Story consultation by Lori Neufeld. It's a tradition on this show to end our season with the Alaska flag song, so here it is, as performed by the Alaska Chamber Singers, led by conductor David Hagen. Remember, these are the stories we tell up here in Alaska on Dark Winter Nights. I'm Rob Prince.